Well, Michael and I would like to welcome you back to another recording of the Saturn-Earth Connection. Our website is helloearth.info, and today is Tuesday, October 6th, 2015, and this is our 285 with Michael from Maui, Hawaii. Michael was taken to a huge luminescent sphere near Saturn as a student visitor and returned to Maui with their amazing flowing dialogue, and occasionally we hear from Shaharon using Michael to transmit his voice into the recording. And I once again want to thank James from North Wales, Pennsylvania. James, I appreciate what you're doing, sponsoring Michael's hours for everyone to hear. Thank you so much, because it's a help. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Curtis.
Hello, welcome back, and what a fast week that was.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, really.
Very good, fast week.
And we, we could start right away where we sort of left off with, I read Wendy's email to you on the 23rd of September. Well, this was last week I read it, and she sent it the 23rd of September, but we didn't really have time to go through this well enough, so we're going to read this again. Okay, subject is Fruits of Divinity. Dear gents, I trust this finds you well. We are enjoying the renewed beauty of spring in New Zealand, and the fruit trees are in full blossom. It is only fitting that I felt the desire to read more of the spiritual fruits that Jesus spoke so much of during his time on Urantia. There are hundreds of references to this topic in the Urantia book, but the following reference struck me the most, paper 56. And this is near the end of paper 56. To finite man, truth, beauty, and goodness embrace the full revelation of divinity reality. As this love comprehension of deity finds spiritual expression in the lives of God-knowing mortals, there are yielded the fruits of divinity, intellectual peace, social progress, mortal satisfaction, spiritual joy, and cosmic wisdom. The advanced mortals on a world in the seventh stage of light and life have learned that love is the greatest thing in the universe, and they know that God is love. Love is the desire to do good to others. And then Wendy finishes by writing, I often ponder on the wonder of participating in this broadcast, and I never take this gift for granted. The mere miracle of gathering once a week to be in the presence of our wise teachers, the Shaharon, and to get to know all those that participate in sponsoring the podcast, presenting and sharing in Michael's wonderful experience of visiting the New Jerusalem, is such a treasure to me. To each of you, I can truthfully call dear friends, and I hope to cross paths with, be it on Urantia or another sphere. I know you too share in my joy, in the full understanding that what we now know in part, one day we will know in full. We may live on a backwards and confused planet, but already we experience the joy and great hope of being part of the family of God. We all share in this love compression of God. I would gratefully appreciate if the Shaharon could expand on the fruits of divinity if they so desire. And Wendy signs it by saying, sincerest and warmest greetings from New Zealand, your friend Wendy. Thank you, Wendy.
Yes, thank you, Wendy. One of the things that I mentioned to Curtis just before we started recording was we talk about things like how's the weather and you know, everything's nice. And then, of course, ideal of, I kind of expressed, was that we are really in a very exciting time. Didn't I say that?
Yes.
And yeah, it's an exciting time. And you look around, it's because, well, there's negative, a lot, you know, there's wars and stuff, but there's very much a very exciting time because we're in a transition from moving from one paradigm to the next. And in so doing, there will be struggles, there will be hardships. These are all part of the shifting of one way of doing things to another way, which would actually lead to a real environment that can actually nurture and foster the very nature that was pointed out within the Yidansha book in terms of the fruits of divinity, the fruits of becoming more divine. And that, of course, was mentioned, and I'll review that again, which is intellectual peace, social progress, moral satisfaction, spiritual joy, and cosmic wisdom. When you look at that and you place them within our present society, intellectual peace, we try to develop that. We have things like the Nobel Prize. It looks for concepts of peace. Individuals who make contribution to such things in ways in which we can implement. But the ultimate thing for that is coming from divinity, the implementation through mortal hands. And the vessels in which, or the individuals, or vessels of the divine nature, are liberated to express these things when the environment so allows. And in the midst of this environment, we must learn to appreciate what is going to allow for the divine expression, which will eventually lead to a great uplift in the social progress of our whole paradigm, the way we live. And of course, moral satisfaction would mean that we have become a better people that can actually say, wow, we have ascended to the point where we can look at situations that show a high level of this development in light of the fact, and also in bearing light on the fact that we have things that we need to take care of. In other words, it's an ongoing process. Entropy, this loss or wearing down or going backwards, is part of society also. And it takes a continual renewal effort, which really cannot come from mortal hands, but must be infused from divinity into the mortal and society itself, and thus through becoming through society itself. And the end result is spiritual joy and cosmic wisdom. The cosmic wisdom, of course, comes down from the fact that we have enlightenment that really comes down from the higher realm of experienced beings who in a test of time have proven what is a much more close to perfect way of doing things. So the paradigm shift takes on a cosmic, you might say, tilt, a cosmic implementation sometimes, but more understanding of a cosmic revelation. And this is something that we are doing right now on this program. And as a result, we hope to embed that very reality into the hearts and minds of anyone and all who can first of all, absorb it, then live it, and then allow for the environment to come to the ripening, you might say, the fruition, and the fruition of these spiritual and divine gifts. So as far as Shaharoons, he's been on my shoulder, you might say, waiting to make comment. And I'll let him come forward right now. This is the autodactic Shaharoon. Ted.
Hello, Ted. Hello, Shaharoon. Welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for desiring to understand exactly the points that you need to hear. Of course, we could never teach it to you if you were not ready to hear it. And what was earlier said by Michael, which I did prepare him for to say, is the very fact that you are on the brink, the very threshold of coming forward in a great shift in the way you do things. The revelation of us, the reality that you have brethren, friends, cousins, you might say, in the realm beyond your planet, who have been watching and shepherding your destiny, while at the same time guarding your personal freedoms, as well as how you choose freely to immobilize the natures that hold you back, while at the same time allowing for the liberties that we point you to. There, you might have an anchor of stability, while at the same time having an openness of free choice. And thus, your planet will become much better than it is right now. Don't let your minds and hearts be troubled in the things that are going on right now in your planet. The war, the struggles, are all part of the necessary changes that must be made between the archaic. Those things that are traditions and have no basis on the freedom for which you are and have been invited to share. And that freedom is fully drinking in the divine nature, the divine experience, the divine knowledge, and divine wisdoms, all freely shared with you who are open and understand because of this willingness and openness of heart, there will be a greater and greater peace and understanding. You must understand now you are at the crossroads of taking a step forward in a direction which will liberate your planet toward a much greater sense of true independence. And this would be also the independence that you need in order to elevate society. Initially, the structure of the financing of your planet, the division of labor that necessitated the finance. Without finance, there couldn't be a true division of labor that you might construct for yourselves. A more modern society in which cities make life much more productive and easier, but having many times lost sight of your goal, which is to ascend and to be part of us, has been smeared and blurred in the vision of the men's traditions in religions, dogmas, which have absolutely at times given the wrong message. These things all must undergo change and restructure. The energy demands of your society are one of the great changes that need to be addressed. For surely those things which are well and easily available or used, but you do not want to return to them. I speak of the development of energy with the use of fired material, such as petrochemicals, coal. But now let's look at a great change that needs to take place. In order that you might be able to fully utilize energy nearly for free, you must understand the energy that is contained within the very soil in which you stand upon. That soil is truly filled with energy. The transmission of such energy has multiple modes, but the energy itself must be harnessed and released. You understood the release suddenly of energy nuclear, and you think of nuclear as equating to death and destruction. This is not so. Not in the manner in which many of our planets have been elevated, were elevated by use of the very soil in which the planet was made of. You look at fissionable materials as evil. This is not so. It is only part of your culture because of the reality of its explosive nature when harnessed to do destruction. But did you know there is a much safer way? And what holds it back from happening is a continual fear. Yes, by the smaller countries on your planet. And these countries are well aware of the dominance that sits upon them by other countries who bear the power of such weaponry. As a result, the desire of these countries to come to a point of having at least a negotiable property, in other words, having equal weaponry, motivates them toward, again, the wrong direction in nuclear energy. There are two great forces that stand between your society to do good. These forces are finance, coupled by greed and profit, and fear, which manifests in war and war material. These two things must go through change. Fear, which is good, preserves. It protects. Fear, which is evil, does not care about others. finances, very similar, because it is coupled with fear. You see that on the horizon is the exact opposite: joy, peace, beauty, all the embellishments of the divine nature, which is love. These things are set free when you mobilize yourselves to understand how your planet can be fulfilled in its higher destiny by looking to the way in which we have been pointing you to, but were ignored. Nuclear energy that is absolutely safe. Yes, it will be fission, but absolutely safe. But the drawback from this technique is that there is no output of fissionable material that can be harvested from it. Therefore, no deadly weaponry could be manufactured. It was hard for us to dictate this truth to a very primitive society in the past. The nations will stand before us having the Lord Most High, Universe Creator, looking upon them. The New Jerusalem, there which we are orbiting, but not yet implanted upon your planet, will have a time, as it was pointed out in to the old man, the prophet of old. His name was Isaiah. Isaiah could see, as we would show. In that day, which is very close, the assembly of the multitudes will be enlightened upon your planet, infused with knowledge which I try to share with you and hope that it successfully embeds, seated truthfully in your planet, and ignited fire and flame of greater truth and understanding. In that day, people will come and say, let us go to the mountain of the Lord, to the house God of Jacob, the ancients, of those who were writing and scrolls on scrolls of paper and parchment. That he may teach us concerning his ways, and that we may walk in his paths. This is very much what you ask for. Your Ansha book speaks, yes, of the nature of divinity, the divine ways. For the law will go from Zion, the author, the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. We understand it is all from the same source. And now he will judge between the nations of your planet and render decisions to many people. And then they will hammer their swords into plowshares, peaceful implements, not of war, but of peace. And their spears into pruning hooks, that they may prune back the unproductive and make them productive again. Nation will not lift up sword against nation, and never again will they learn war. Come, all of you, Planet Urantia, let us walk in the light of the Lord. This light is right now under threat by the forces of fear and finance. But do not be surprised that a different kind of war is already now being kindled. One that will force the hand of the blacksmith to reforge the very implements of war into implements of peace, that divinity may reign in the hearts of all of you, and the nature of goodness may, through eyes enlightened with the light of divinity, see truth, beauty, and goodness in all, and thus be able to nurture and foster the very planet you desire. In a more practical way, I will expose to you simply this. There is another way, but the way presently that you are progressing requires change, and indeed the forces which hold them in place are as strong as any of the anchoring forces that would hold steady a team of horses. But this team of horses, both harnessed and guided by reins, must be guided by the hand of divinity, and will turn your culture toward peaceful and wonderfully clean energy, which will liberate your planet to ascend toward the goals and destiny of true light and prosperity, true and enlightened divinity in individuals, and a life that will allow for the development of the soul of every single individual conceived in the womb of your very mortal and fertile structure of living. I yield now back to Michael, who will help explain the earthly parameters by which you might obtain such things. Bid you farewell for now.
Farewell, Shaharon. I'm looking forward to speaking with you again or hearing you. It's speak to us again.
Okay. He's gone. Allow me to relax. Okay. And
I was just
excuse me.
I was just thinking about what he Shaharon. One of the, some of the things he said. He was saying that the wrong direction was nuclear energy, but then he also said that
no, the wrong direction is the direction of moving backward toward the old energy sources of coal and fossil fuels. But we have been tricked into thinking that nuclear energy was the wrong way because it was to be used for war and radiation and all those negative things.
And he also said pointing toward nuclear energy was absolutely safe.
Yes. There is an absolutely safe way of working with nuclear energy.
Well, and the question is that what we're doing, or do we have an antiquated way of dealing with nuclear energy, just trying to cool it off?
Are we working with the way to make bombs with our nuclear power plants? That's why Iran's fast breeder reactor is a problem. Because these things that were made in Syria, these power plants were for bomb making. Fissionable material falls to uranium and plutonium, and two levels of uranium, which are fissionable. 235 and 233, and then plutonium. You can make bombs out of 235 and plutonium. But you can't make a bomb out of 233. But 233, uranium 233, is a excellent fuel for the use of the energy within the atom. Presently, we are using less than 1% of the available power in the atomic structure of uranium or for peaceful purposes. But out of that, we get a lot of plutonium. When we look at the Daiichi, the Fukushima Daiichi, the first great nuclear power plant, Daiichi, the number one big one that ended up in a meltdown, because it was a boiling pot design. And it blew its lid because it developed too much hydrogen and it ignited, exploding the thing off, which ended up opening all its guts of the very fissionable material to the atmosphere. The design in which I was told to go look into was something called molten salts or thorium molten salt energy, which was developed in the 1950s by the very same inventor, Alvin Weinberg, who invented the boiling pot reactor. But it was the boiling pot design was taken and used initially for war by making the submarine, the Nautilus, the first nuclear submarine, nuclear powered ship. it took the boiling pot design and placed it within the submarine and had all kinds of monitors. And they have not had problems with that design because of extreme monitoring. And what it amounts to is you have to have a type of containment vessel for solid fuel, which heats up water to an extremely high temperature, which cannot be maintained because if it was open to the atmosphere, it would simply boil off and then you would melt down. As long as the vessel was contained, you could hold the pressure. And the pressure would have water in its liquid state as a coolant and as a carrier of heat, which can be transferred to another steam source and then drive turbines, which was its design back in the 50s. But at the same time, another project was put on there because you got to remember trying to get nuclear weapons over your enemy, which at the time was Cold War. It was, again, fear motivated, which is Shaorun was pointing out, drove the idea of saying we need a plane that can fly all the way through intercontinentally without refueling and drop these bombs, nuclear bombs, to say, you know, don't mess with us. It's the very same idea that is going on with the smaller countries like North Korea, Iran. Other countries have already demonstrated their capability, like Pakistan and India and China and many others. Of course, even South Africa, of all things. And of course, all the rest of those nuclear countries that have reactors all are capable of it. But out of that program of making a nuclear-powered airplane came the design of thorium liquid salt reactors, which became a very viable, very good form of using nuclear energy, using a lighter material, not uranium, but thorium, which could be enriched, thus become uranium-233, which is not fissionable for bomb standards, but fissionable for the production of energy, heat. Mm. But out of that, you could not produce any plutonium or any 235, another bomb making. You could not produce it. So it had no capability of producing weaponry. In 1972, Nixon cut funding for the program. And the program stalled completely. We are on the brink of a nuclear war right now, but a different kind. And this nuclear war is convoluted somewhat, nebulous in its entanglements. And that is a nuclear war between industry, its present paradigm. You know, when it comes down to that paradigm, you ever heard of the razor, I think it was the razor paradigm. You sell people the device, like for shaving, you know, for even a loss, perhaps. You know, the early razors were very expensive, you know, machining to make the double-edged razor or whatever. Mm-hmm. But they weren't after that. They were after selling the razor blades. So what they would do was sell the razor holder. I don't know what you call those things now.
Well, they call them razors.
razor, yeah, the gadget
that holds the blade.
Take the blade.
Yeah, holds the
and
blade.
That that would be sold as a loss, generally at a loss, just so you could sell the razor blades.
Mm-hmm.
But then they standardized razor blades. So they decided to say, make something else. The same model being, let's keep selling the razors and because you want to sell razor blades. Well, that was taken to many different products, many products, because like copy machines, you sell them for cheap right now because you want to sell the ink.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you really make up. You notice that your copy machine or your printer, your inkjetner, can be purchased very cheaply, but the cost of ink is really high. So that's where they make their money from. The same thing went with nuclear power, believe it or not. The design, the American designs, as well as the other designs out there, whoever the manufacturer was, and I guess with Daiichi was General Electric, they help you build the nuclear plant for nearly free because they want to sell you their fuel, which has to be constructed. Enriched and constructed into pellets and then put into different ways of creating rods and physical solid material, which they could now market because they would always wear out. But the problem with that is you end up with a lot of nuclear waste because out of that, again, you would use up only 0.7 or 0.5 percent of the available energy in the rod. Well, at the same time, in this fast breeder like water reactors, you're making bomb-grade plutonium, bomb-grade uranium. So that's, you know, the motivation. And the ideal of liquid salt was that now you can take thorium, place it within a structure of fluoride, not the same kind of fluoride, same family, fluoride, in which you use for fluoridation, but in its crystallized form, you partner that together with thorium and heat it up so it becomes liquid. However, if it ever spilled from its liquid form onto the floor, let's say, of your backyard, let's say, your backyard patio, because there are plans literally to put these little reactors in your backyard. It would immediately crystallize or freeze up, rendering the fuel harmless, because it couldn't make itself into nuclear fuel, because it has to be enriched by neutronic action, bombardment by neutrons. And that's one thing. So if, you know, you had all this liquid thorium fluoride combination, or molten salts, they call it, flowing around in the inside of your reactor, it will be boiling around in there at 0.1 atmosphere. What is 0.1 atmosphere? A little bit below sea level.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's
like Death Valley.
Mm-hmm.
So is that dangerous for an explosion at 0.1 atmosphere at sea level? Probably couldn't even hear it. We got way more than 0.1 atmosphere explosion when we open up a can of soda.
Uh-huh.
And you hear that, whoosh, you know, that's way more than 0.1. That's about two atmospheres, I think, maybe three, 2.5. Yeah?
Mm-hmm. You mean the pressure in the can?
Yeah, and the pressure in the can.
Okay.
Yeah, to get carbonated water or carbonated soda or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So we're operating at near atmosphere. So there's no idea that the liquid could explode. And even if it did, it would, the fuel would run out and crystallize and render it inert, back to basically dirt, which is how common thorium is. There are in the world presently strong research for thorium liquid salt nuclear power in countries like India and China and Japan. Japan has taken a monumental move right now because of Fukushima Daiichi's meltdown. Mm-hmm. And they're highly motivated to produce energy this way. An interesting factor about producing energy this way and their problem with nuclear waste in Daiichi is the very nuclear waste is the fuel they can add into the thorium mix and burn up in a very safe way these fuels that are considered spent. The very spent fuel is not spent in the process of liquid salts. So this is what will happen, and is presently happening, is a new form of nuclear war. The warfare is economic between the United States, who has got lots and lots of fast breeder reactors, light water fast breeder reactors, and the paradigm that there we have a populace around the planet that fears nuclear power, no matter what kind. So you need a culture that says the populace and what they think may not necessarily be the best thing for them. And ideally, it would be more authoritarian. In other words, it's like parent-child. You don't know what's good for you yet. You think it's dangerous, but it's not. But we're going to do what is best for you. And this is part of the divine nature. Otherwise, we wouldn't need parenting in bringing up children, right? Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, oh, my parents were so mean because they didn't permit me to play with matches. You know, I said, well, if my dad can light a cigarette with it, I can light everything with my matches, you know. And I, you know, and of course, you know, it's kind of fun, right?
Yeah.
But I never experienced as a little kid what fire could do until one day I was taken to just look across the street when the cane field was being burned. He says, go put it out. And I watched them ignite it. It's the same way as I played with the matches. It's a little fire and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. I must have been like 4 years old at the time. You know, oh, it goes out of control. No, that's under control, but look. You know, yeah. So I learned my lesson in a nice way. Hopefully, we can learn the lesson of nuclear power in a nice way, because China is the ideal ground to force down the throat of their society safe nuclear power, and they are before the earthquake in Japan. Mm-hmm. No, before that ever happened in Japan, before the meltdown. China was already very strongly working with American companies, which are, you might say, expert in the thorium liquid salt field of safe nuclear power. The reason they're in China is because of the culture in the U.S. prohibiting that type of research. And China has now the deep pockets necessary to fund that. And that was all before the meltdown of Fukushima Daiichi power plants. So now they're ready and have in place the very prototypes necessary to put into mass production essentially the modular design of the new modular designs of small nuclear power, which are would be contained in interchangeable reactors that can be scaled up or scaled down according to need. Also distributed worldwide. An interesting statement made by the very top people in this project in China was, we are not interested in consumption. We're interested in the distribution, or the you might say, the friendship that can be developed by giving away energy. And China has friends all around the world. Some of their biggest friends are in South America. Big countries, Argentina, Brazil, good friends with China. All these third world nations screaming for energy. And you come over there with a module, plunk it down, dig a hole in the backyard, drop it down, hook up the wires, and you got free energy, essentially. Not, it's free because the fuel is almost free. In India, they've got whole beaches that are made out of thorium. Yeah. And in China, who is the world's leading producer in rare earth minerals, that's the rubbish, the waste material they have to gather, they have to get rid of in order to get at the rare earth mineral material that they use for powerful magnets and other devices that are necessary for our wind farms, photovoltaics. Now they got all this waste material, which is thorium, which they were researching a long time ago. Now they're at that point, you know, of actually, you know, implementing it. And Japan is not far behind. But the U.S. and Europe are still at that point of saying all nuclear power is evil. There's no such thing as good nuclear power. But if we really understood that, we would say, is the planet we live on evil? Because basically that's what's happening in the core of our planet. A nuclear furnace is happening. So we have an internal reactor for our planet, helping to generate our planetary magnetic field and also the pulse of life. And a lot of life is being generated because of the dynamics that come about because of energy, the movement of material and electrodynamic forces. Yeah. Electromagnetic, electrodynamic forces. So right now there is presently by the celestials a gaze upon our planet, looking at, you might say, all the countries of the planet. How am we going to lift up this planet when they are actually trying to move away from the very technology that will allow them to elevate the entire planet? Just because they slipped and made bombs first.
Mm-hmm. So, Michael, you say whole beaches have this thorium in India?
And India is literally way ahead in the curve. They had projections of bringing forth, let's see, 8-9 years ago, maybe bringing about functioning reactors within a few years, and they actually have working demonstration reactor running right now, and alongside various forms, including the present light water reactors, boiling pot, breeder reactors, the bad ones. Another interesting thing about thorium molten salt is that it has an efficiency of over 40% of the material energy, of thorium's energy, being used up, while at the same time consuming nearly 90%, over 90%, nearly all, 98%, something like that, of spent fuels and plutonium. You were to throw plutonium, spent fuels into the mix, it'll consume that as energy in the burning of U-233, the enriched form of thorium. So we've got a whole bunch of spent fuel that will be consumed in the making of energy, and that will be primarily Tesla's favorite energy, electrical. And you wouldn't necessarily need his high tension lines. You could put these nuclear power plants in small communities, and they'd be independently functional. And the first ones that will be getting that is part of China's war to save the planet. You know, China never makes war. Did you know that? Japan made war a lot. Mm-hmm. Everybody, you know, points out, yeah. Did China make war? Does China go? The only time you look back at China making wars with, it wasn't China. It was the Mongolian Empire.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah. And they had to submit to the Mongols. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't China. China never made war. So that aspect of China is still in place. You don't think the idea of war is great, but the idea of sporting competition, that's what Japan did. After they were blown up, they said, we were blown up and we lost. But the war hasn't even begun, because we can make it better and we can make it cheaper. And that has been the idea of how Japan's society uplifted itself, pulled itself up on the bootstraps. So China has the very same idea, and that because of that, it became, of course, the largest economy in the world, surpassing the U.S. just recently. Yeah. So, and they're still not even at a point where they are having a standard of living that really can equal us in the U.S. The problem with the U.S. is our living standards are too high in terms of you might say, artificial, low cost of energy. The cost of energy in the U.S. is low compared to many parts of the world, especially fuel costs. You go to any part of the world, fill up petrol, oil, gasoline, whatever you want to call it, it's more expensive, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised that even in oil-producing countries, there were a lot more, like Iran. Because they have the oil, but they don't have the refineries. Now, this is what China's war is all about, because there is not, they said it clearly, it's not for our consumption. We want this technology to share. But in their sharing, they're going to dissolve many of the paradigms of the oil dollar, you know, the locked-in way of keeping the oil companies rich, and energy, and even nuclear energy being locked into the enrichment designs and programs that are functioning. Is companies like GE make their pellets and stuff, and, you know, have their fuel rods sold back to all those that use their design. So when this takes place, a monumental increase in our planet's destiny will become, you might say, lifted. But only if the moral character of a planet remains high. Mm-hmm. That moral character of the planet is being demonstrated by just the idea that China says, oh, we want to create it, but not for consumption, but for to give it away, distribution. Not for consumption, but to distribute it to our friends. Like, you know, you might say, we, in the, after World War II, the United States kind of distributed its wealth, its way, its paradigm, its business models. But those things have changed. But one of the things that caused these business models to elevate themselves was our technologies were high. You know, I looked at Taiwan and said, how can Taiwan be a leading producer of stainless steel? They're an island. Then I noticed, wow, look at that nuclear power plant as I visited the island. They're all over the place. And nuclear power makes an island nation like Taiwan, wow, able to make high energy products feasible, you know, production of stainless steel because of the nuclear power. Well, they had also hydroelectric power too. An interesting thing also is that there is a way of keeping our other sources of energy viable, which are wind and solar photovoltaic, which are part of the experiment on Maui. We have the solar farms, we have lots and lots. The most embedded photovoltaics in the U.S. are on the island of Maui, where I live. And the poor power plant has to run their generators on idle, just waiting for the time they got to take over. When the sun goes down, or the wind stops blowing.
Down, right?
Yeah. All of a sudden, there's a big drop up. Mm-hmm. But that's when that's when everybody starts to turn on their lights and
it's a big surge.
They start cooking. Mm-hmm. They start using hot water. All these things. They have to be ready for that. Mm-hmm. But with molten salts, the turbines that are being run off are being run off of boiler water, right? Mm-hmm. So that boiler is running a high-pressure steam turbine. But you can also input to the steam turbines other sources of the very same pressurized steam. And that can be, and is used right now in Japan. When they turned off their nuclear plants, they went to using natural gas. So what would happen is you have many of the nuclear plants, these liquid molten salt, liquid fuel type nuclear power plants running at a baseline. And at that baseline, you're just sort of like clinking along. We were doing half power. You know, like when you drive your car, you don't want to run it at full throttle all the time. Mm-hmm. Only when you're going up the hill, and that's the most ideal time to use full throttle. Because under heavy load, so because then you'll probably be using the power most efficiently. The piston speed isn't well, and all the technicals behind it. Anyway, the same thing goes for the turbines. So when the wind stops blowing or the sun goes down, and it happens cyclically, then you start pushing in a little bit of extra boost, quick boost from. Something like abundant natural gas. And of course, you burn that off, and natural gas is the cleanest of all fossil fuels. You can make it even cleaner. And you can also take byproducts of that natural gas through the excess energy and make clean burning liquid fuels, which could be used in place of gasoline and diesel in the present cars. So all of these things are available in this next wave, but we have these hurdles to overcome. And right now, there is a judgment of the nations going on by our celestial friends. And they have a while back made the decision that China would be somewhat of a more ideal place to implement this technology for the good of humanity. It's not as held back by fear and tradition, and of course by the population. It has more of a little bit more authoritarian big brother or parent child structure to its not so much like you know, they have this term like the tail wagging the dog, you know. We want the dog wagging its tail because it's happy, not the tail wagging the dog. You know, the opposite. So that's where and why China was given the lead, and also was just a natural push because the guys who were for it, it's the only place we can implement this technology is in China, and they're opening up their door and opening their arms to us, and they're giving us the funding, and we can go ahead and make this stuff. So to a degree, we don't know where they're at, but to their basic timetables, they're way ahead. They're right there to start plugging in modules. And how these modules would be contained and constructed would be very similar to the shipbuilding industry, because the ships are no longer built, you know, from the old way. They're built modularly. And much like the concept of Lego bricks, that's how. If you want a power plant, you want to scale it up, just put more Lego bricks in there. It's the very same way as we run our parallel turbine generation. You know, you go in, even if you go into the dams, you see not just one turbine turning. You see a multiplicity of turbines turning, and they all are in. And you might say, working together. So we have this new paradigm, but it also erodes much of the extreme power base that make up the most powerful companies and have the greatest to lose. And they're located in the United States. That's a big problem to overcome.
You mean war and finance?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. China sees, let's make friends with everybody. And we always paint them as the great red evil, but, you know, Mao Zedong is dead already. I went to China and it's not the same China.
So this thorium salt reactor, I'll call it, is...
Yeah.
Been around since the 50s, and it seems to be rather easy to build.
If you can have
it in every backyard.
Yes, there are problems to it. The problems are, the salts are corrosive, so they don't last forever. Mm-hmm. So the material, and one of the materials like stainless steel, has high chromium content, and chromium for you know, its ability to be in a oxygen-rich environment, which, of course, steel rust doesn't like it. It rusts. The very same thing happens to stainless steel when it is exposed to fluoride. So fluoride, the nature of this hot fluoride-based liquid running on it will cause it to... you know, be essentially corroded away. So they have materials that both China and the U.S., well, the U.S., China took the initial metallurgy that was developed by Alvin Weinberg's team that made the demonstration reactor. That, and as I believe, improved upon it, understanding what problems they have. And they have been on that for a long time. They have little teams that are working on special segments of the actual project. You know, you go and you look at materials, you look at different ways to use spent fuel, you look at different ways in which to ignite the process of neutronics and the accelerators that are compact, and you look at different pumps and ceramics and different, all kinds of different specialists are in there. The same thing goes with the U.S. The U.S. is so far behind because of the nature, and believe it or not, Europe's experts are also behind because of what they've faced and the idea to go with what works. What works is not very efficient, has a lot of danger, has an exposure of possibility of exposing public to an explosive mix of highly radioactive nuclear fuels that have been enriched. Again, if that were to happen in molten salts, it will literally leak into a containment vessel, which is an open pot, believe it or not, and that would solidify, rendering the products within it inert. Back, they basically almost come back down to raw material. Again, the neutrino bombardment, the neutronic bombardment is what starts the reaction.
Well, this story...
He's also using graphite as another material, which is also a good, what they call a moderator. In other words, to keep the, sort of like throttle the reaction process.
Mm-hmm. So in other words, if we didn't want to make bombs, we would have gone in this
long
direction.
Long ago, absolutely. The world would be a much better place.
No,
but the rich guys would not exist. The super rich. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they would not exist.
Well, right.
Because it was all tied together with oil. And that's the vision that I received about falling into this, you know, from way up in the sky, looking down into essentially like a cylinder, which looked like a open oil tank, falling into it, seeing all the industry running around, cars, factories, people, various other things, all in high bold relief, and some of it which is carved in as like cartouches in Egyptian, into the sandstone side, all of them moving and active and allowing and tied together with this one disc in the middle, which had a profile of a human being, which was from, you might say, you could take it from Caesar's profile, all these different profiles, put every famous individual on the side of it, representing money, all of that radiating out to the sides of the oil tank, which had all of these things running, and all of that breaking down. So from the time in which I received that vision, which was just before we started this podcast with you, Curtis, it was telling us that that's the project, to stop. And also remember, I had the other vision, which was all these beautiful horses all in a corral that were really crowded, and all of a sudden they broke free and ran free,
mm-hmm.
you know, into where the horses roam, you know, out in the plains and the pastures, you know. Some of them stayed within there and they were perfectly happy, but it was no longer crowded. And many of them that broke out had a wide open space to live in. So this is the project that we're on right now, our celestial friends, to change the way we do business, to elevate the planet toward higher destiny, which are the fruit of the divine nature, which includes our intelligence to manipulate our environment, but not toward weaponry, but for good. Yeah, to become like a wise parent of our own planet. Mm-hmm. Does that make any sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, weaponry is just not, well, it disarmed, not a positive way.
In the Cold War, it changed, you know, when Gorbachev just gave up, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
It's like it broke him, trying to keep the Cold War going.
Yeah, the war machine going.
War machine going, yeah. So... Hmm. Well, China sees that they've got to do stuff about that too, and they're in the Middle East thing too, and kind of in a sense, sort of working with Russia, but not in a hot war yet. But yeah.
Well, I hope these type of reactors make it to the surface and get rid of these other
other
reactors for making war. Well,
mm-hmm. And that's Korea. They want that. Iran wants that. And once you know that there's a they know all about molten salt reactors, and they know that molten salt reactors will only give them energy, electrical mm-hmm. energy, and no bombs. And that's not what they're building. In fact, Korea, North Korea, shared their technology with Syria, but. Israel came in and blew up their nuclear power plants. So you see the logic behind that. You see, oh yeah, obviously, they want to make bombs.
Still. Mm-hmm. Well, I hope the Celestials and the Shaharons can change that way of thinking. Mm-hmm. In our...
Well, they require our participation.
Uh-huh. And when you say our participation, what does that refer to?
That refers to getting the word out.
Getting the word out. All right, well, that's what we're trying to do.
Yep.
And we're over our time a little bit, so do you want to add anything else before we close?
I think that is a big answer for Wendy's question. But it's where we gotta go.
Well, it's better than the direction we're going in.
Yeah, we don't need to make reactors for bombs anymore.
I mean, we probably have enough reactors for making bombs. We could have these other reactors that would take over.
Yeah, and use all the bombs to help the poor countries. Energy frees everybody mm-hmm. from the enslavement of and toil of. Well, we initially were. Allowed to become enslaved by our own foolishness.
Mm-hmm. Well, it'll be wonderful to see this switch and change during our lifetime.
Yeah, we will.
Good.
It won't take long because China is going to wage nuclear war, but a different kind. To distribute it, make many friends. The U.S. went around making friends and said, we'll protect you with our war machines. The world is so unsafe, the world is so unsafe. Really? Why would Korea want to make bombs? Because they feel scared.
Mm-hmm.
That paradigm. You look at Korea in... lit up at night. You see South Korea beautifully illuminated by its own energy sources.
And then North Korea has that line It's just everything dark. Almost everything is dark above there.
Yeah, it's only one little area. And even that area turns off.
Well, it's sad for the people of North Korea and for many parts of the world who do not have an on-the-grid electrical source. They don't have electricity. Quite a bit.
Yeah. Again, I say, is China's motivation to distribute that technology and do it in a way that probably will give them a lot of allies. If we don't change our ways, they're going to surpass us real quick. And that would be allowed by the Shahruns, because under the tyranny of the old communist regime, the destiny of the human soul was preserved by the Christians that went underground and endangered their very lives by maintaining a belief in the scriptures of old, which were teaching the very truth in essence, and maybe not so clearly, but still the purpose of the human soul.
Well, thank you, Michael. And
welcome.
Let's close, because we're over farther than we usually go. But I like China's idea to motivate and get this going.
Yeah.
Thanks for letting us know, and brought this to my attention for sure.
Okay.
All right.
You can look it all up. It's all on the internet.
Oh, good.
When I first looked into it, it was scarce. But now it's really rich, so the word is getting out there.
And it's called thorium?
Yeah, thorium molten salt reactor.
Molten salt reactor. All right. All right. Thank you, Michael.
Okay. Aloha.
Aloha.